This is Alex once again with the EOT Newsflash. This is episode 84. Arr, remember your triggers, mateys. If you are watching on YouTube tonight, thank you so much. I'd like to introduce my co-host for the evening, directly beneath me, Mr. Jess Forkner. What's going on, brother?
Not much. Just, you know, glad to be back finally after a extended hiatus.
Yes. Did you go anywhere with your time off? Did you travel? Did you see the world? Did you planes walk anywhere?
School.
So Tolarian Academy?
Yeah, there we go. Tolarian Academy. That's what we'll go with.
Just trying to keep it on theme. And then directly across from him, his most excellentness, Busted Sleeves himself. How's it going, Sean?
Good, man. A little tired, but pretty good.
Yeah, it's been a long week. I could complain about work, but I'm not going to do that because that's not the time for this. This is the time for magic and all kinds of positive talk about positive changes in magic, because all changes in magic are positive. At least the ones for tonight, changes. They are.
This alludes to a very good our conversation later. I'm normally very negative on a lot of things magic does. So, no. Normally, no.
But tonight, yes. It's a special occasion. But before we dig into anything fun tonight, if you're watching on YouTube, directly above my head, there's a little thing at the top side of the screen. Flipside Gaming. We got a sponsor. So I do want to give a quick shout out to my new best friend, a guy named Connor. He works up in New York. He owns Flipside Gaming, and they reached out to us as they are expanding their online presence and asked if they'd like to have some sponsored content through them. And I said yes. So I highly recommend you going over to flipsidegaming.com. They have all of your Pokemon, Magic, Star Wars, Destiny, board games, comic books, all kinds of stuff that every nerd can possibly need, and just use the promo code EOT, all caps, at your checkout and receive 10% off your order. Pretty exciting.
And support us.
And support us at the same time. Everybody wins, and that's what we all like to do in Magic, is win. Unless you play Lantern Control, and then nobody wins.
Everything's still fine.
So, for tonight, we got some fun stuff to talk about. We had the pre-release last weekend. I got to compete in a Twitter Giant one. I know you guys got to compete in some as well. Going to touch on what we played, you know, the things that impressed us, the things that didn't impress us. And that's going to lead directly into the Star City Games Open, which is taking place in my hometown, originally from Dallas, Texas, where you guys still are hailing from. Magic players will descend upon, I guess, the Fort Worth Convention Center again, or is it somewhere else this time?
Fort Worth Convention Center.
There we go. And they're gonna duel with some dinosaurs and some pirates, but probably mostly a lot of Teemer energy.
Yeah. No. It's not like there's like two schools of testing right now in the format, like online, because I reuse rental cards. It's like decks I can play with, which are the best decks in the format, and they have like no Ixalan. And these decks, I don't know how good they are, but they're all Ixalan, so it's like it's forcing me to play safe because I can't screw around with like any of these other decks.
That's fair. We'll wait till next week, and then we can do something crazy. And then we're going to wrap up the evening. We had a pretty, I wouldn't say significant rules change, but it's more of just a, for communication's sake, we have had a change to Magic and how rules are enacted, how cards are played. And we're going to discuss that because it's got some pretty far-reaching ramifications. And yeah, positive changes as always. So, let's talk pre-release. I got to play in a Twitter Giant pre-release on Saturday with my girlfriend. It was her first time playing actually what I would consider competitive Magic, not with decks that I had built from a box of Modern Masters 2017. Sean, where did you play at?
Went up to Common Grounds, and I played the Saturday morning 10:30 a.m. Just regular pre-release, no two-headed giant or anything like that.
Nice. What about you, Justin?
Because apparently I make bad decisions. I did the midnight pre-release at a wonderful shop, Common Grounds. That wasn't the terrible decision. Midnight was. It was a very, very fun experience, though. I just, you know, was dead Saturday. So, yeah, it was a good time. If you're going to do a pre-release, I highly recommend Common Grounds. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. I played in my Lord Michael Shop's dungeon games. They put on a heck of a show. Everybody gets, you know, they give away free dice for everybody. Even if you lose, you get a roll in their random binder. I want a pack of Eternal Masters out of the random binder that had unexpectedly absent inside of it and not a foil Force of Will. So, win some, lose some.
Yeah. Unexpectedly absent is not as good of a turnout.
No, no, it really isn't. So, Sean, I'm going to throw it to you first. What did you play in your pre-release?
So, my pre-release deck, I don't typically open, like, just clearly great decks. My deck was very subpar. It, like, wasn't great. I had a pirate deck that was, like, real clever and tempo-y. And then I had a green-white dino deck that was just, like, all awful dinosaurs. It was really bad. Like, it was a bunch of, like, rated like C minuses and D's and stuff. Like, it was just not very good.
Like the Altasaur?
No. Like the 5-drop 4/4 can block multiple creatures. Ooh, Triceratops kind of.
Yeah.
So bad. That wasn't phenomenal. I don't know. It didn't go great. I played the Pyrotech the whole time. I went 2-2. Flooded out real hard, but the Pyrotech was just fun. It tempoed out real well. The Pirates are really cool. Didn't have any of the great Pirates. I had Advances Blasting Station. Didn't really win with that very much. I splashed red for the 5/5/5 that has Haste and Trample Dinosaur.
Yeah.
And then I just won off a bunch of shenanigans. Just shenanigans all day. Like, I was just trying to squeeze things through. I did have double of the 7-drop Milieu for 13 fish. and I started off 2-0. My second round, I beat a player who had 2 Jaces and the red-white Planeswalker.
2 Jaces?
Yeah, he had 2 Jaces and the red-white Planeswalker. And he had the blue pirate that taps things if you have another pirate. And he had a Glacial Fortress. In his Jeskai deck, and like he like games 1 and 2, he turned 2, played the 2/2 menace for a red and white whenever he had mostly islands in the deck. I was just like, man, whatever's happening, you're getting so lucky. And so game 3, I just like slammed this fish, it just milled him out right before I died. I was like, oh gosh, I'm gonna run over. Yeah, I played double fish, it was great.
Double fish sounds good. So your pirate deck, was it just blue black with splashing red then?
Yeah, it was blue, black, splashing red.
Cool.
It was pretty good.
Sweet.
But it wasn't phenomenal. The Pirates were awesome. But
yeah, for sure. What about you, Justin? What did you pilot at your pre-release?
Well, I did Grixis Pirates as well, though I opened some of the decent black and red Pirates, and my blue was pretty weak, but it was good enough that I felt like the splash was worth what I was getting out of it.
Sure.
And I actually had so much over my 6 packs in all of the tribes and everything, my creatures were actually pretty thin, so I was playing creatures that I probably wouldn't have otherwise, because I opened a million removal spells, which actually felt fantastic for the deck that I was running, because, you know, I was able to keep the board clear and just keep attacking people. And then if the board stall ever did happen, I would eventually draw into Argoroth's Marauders to do a million damage in one turn. But
seems good.
I think my favorite pirate for the limited environment was the Deadeye Quartermaster, because it fetched the Fell Flagship.
Oh, yeah.
So then I'd get to slam that down and start, you know, making people discard their hands and whatnot.
Sick.
And for those that don't know, it's a 4-mana 2/2 that tutors equipment or vehicles.
Sick.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Yeah, so like I said, and what did you end up going record-wise?
Oh, 3-1. My only loss was in game 3. I got my opponent down to 3, then had to block because he slammed down the green hexproof trampley guy. Carnage
Tyrant.
he slams that down. I've got a bunch of removal spells in my hand that I can't use against it.
Naturally.
Like, well, you know, if I take any hits from this, I'm dead. So double block to kill it, and then all I have to do is just draw a creature in the next 5 turns. Or you know, anything that's not a land, essentially. So, for the next five
tribes, five lands.
Yes. Five land. And I already had seven lands in play at this point. So we hit 12 of my 17 lands.
Nicely done.
Yeah, so, I mean, really the deck, you know, it was like this close to 4-0.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clearly.
This is, I think, the first time in the last, like, five or six releases I wasn't able to ID the last round for extra packs and stuff.
Oh, nice.
It was a little disappointing.
Very cool. So for my two-headed giant pre-release, basically I sat down with 12 packs. I was like a kid in a candy store. My girlfriend Chelsea has basically played no Magic other than some decks I built for us out of a box, like I mentioned, out of a Modern Masters 2017. So she was just like, do your thing. I'm like, okay, I got this. I was like, you just open packs and sort cards and find the rares. And halfway through, she's like, aren't these good? And she hands me a pair of the green rare, the dinosaur, the 7-drop 5/5, Verdant Sun's Avatar, and then hands me a Burning Sun's Avatar. I said, yes, these are very good. And then I pick up a pile of Pounces and the Seismic Stomping card, the green stompy Costulus if you control a dinosaur. I'm like, oh, okay, we're playing a dinosaur deck, clearly. Had some, you know, some backups on there. We had the 4-drop pirate that steals a guy, threatened at sorcery speed, which was insane. And then I was like, oh, hey, what did you get in your promo? And she's like, oh, this thing in the wrapper. I was like, yeah. And she flips over, it's a freaking Jace. And I'm like, okay, this seems good. And I opened up mine, and I opened up the promo Search for Azkanta, which looks obscenely gorgeous in a foil. The back half of it is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Is that why you want to run it in Modern?
Yes, oh my god, yes.
Yeah, I forgot you got that one foil, and I was like, why are we talking about this?
Yeah, it's really pretty. But
that makes it okay.
It makes it absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Don't question my logic.
That's why I play foil allies, guys.
Exactly.
It makes them better.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yeah, so we built a red-green dinosaur deck, and I had the very difficult choice of deciding if I wanted to play blue-green merfolk or Grixis pirates, because we had some hella good blue-black pirates and also Admiral Beckett brass, and I'm like, oh, this is close. And basically it ended up being that we just had more synergy in the blue-green merfolk deck. We had a couple of the River Herald's Boon, double of Kapala, the legendary merfolk that creates, you know, the bubble effect, kind of like Kira does. Only ended up going 1-2 because of just some really absurd aggro draws in a two-headed giant pre-release, which you don't typically see. But our final round, we managed to swing out for, oh, geez, I think it was like 28 damage plus the creature that pumps by 5 and gives a creature trample. I forget the name of the creature that does it, but we were able to give our Burning Sun Avatar 11 power and trample over for 10 damage. And that was after flipping Growing Rights of Itlamok. So it was a lot of fun. Tons of fun. So I, yeah. Was there anything that really surprised you guys about the pre-release in general? Because I had a couple of things that I noticed pretty quickly, I think.
How playable Dinosaurs was in Limited. I was expecting it to be pretty good in Constructed. I was not expecting it to be good in Limited just because of how expensive a lot of the Dinosaurs are. But I saw a lot of Dinosaur decks doing really well.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
About you, Sean, anything that surprised you in terms of just how the set actually played out?
No, I mean, I think it was about on par with what I expected. I actually expected It looks a lot like what I expected, where if you open an average dinosaur deck, you have to open something really good to pull you off of it.
Yeah.
Because there was enough low curve enablers and ways to reduce the mana and all the splash colors and stuff that the dinosaur deck could put so much size and pressure in play so fast that anything else struggles to keep up, especially because some of the removal isn't ideal and a lot of it's like bouncing and tempoing and stuff.
Yeah, the rule's terrible in this set, actually.
Yeah, like, there's a couple of really good ones, but there's a lot that's not very good.
Yeah.
The reason being is in the dinosaur decks, like, they play one card a turn, so a bounce spell is actually really, really strong.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the ability to put some evasion guys on the board with the bounce spells, you just die. So, like, unless you have a really ridiculously bad dinosaur pool, your dinosaur deck is probably where you start your evaluation every time, which is kind of what I expected. Like, the dinosaurs are just too big, too plentiful to ignore, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by just how playable every tribe actually ended up being. At my pre-release, I saw, because we had, you know, 12 packs, you have a lot more flexibility, obviously, and a lot more depth. But I was seeing people that were playing vampire decks, red-white dinosaurs, green-white dinosaurs, red-green dinosaurs. Like, the full spectrum was what I was seeing played. Mm-hmm. And I was hearing stories from the previous night where people were just saying, you know, you can play the tribes and not, like, bleed into something too heavily. Which, without having played a tribal set before like this, and this is one of the first ones we've had since Lorwyn? Yeah, like a true tribal set. You know, I don't count Innistrad as that, original Innistrad at least, but yeah, just how deep you can go with these tribes just was super cool. And I'm going to do my first draft tomorrow night, so I'm going to see if that's even more so in drafts, although I'm hearing that blue-green merfolk is the deck to beat.
I would say merfolk is actually a lot better than I expected. It's so synergistic, and it gets explosive, and it has, like, these tempo spells, and your guys can actually get big enough to battle some of the lower-end dinosaurs.
Yeah.
The only cards, in Two-Headed Giant, you probably would have seen it a lot more. The vampires really weren't that strong. I wasn't very impressed. In Two-Headed Giant, they're great, because a lot of them have, like, these, like, when they attack, each opponent loses a life.
The one drop is especially dangerous. Yeah, yeah.
The one drop and the 4-mana Hell Rider is each opponent trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. So you would attack with your vampires and they would lose two life and you gain one.
Yep.
So, like, those guys are a lot better than the Two-Headed Giant, but it still definitely needs some work. Like, I'm not super sold.
Yeah, of all the articles I've read so far on the limited format itself, the vampires have been ranked at the very bottom, which is really disappointing. And everybody's just saying, you know, it's going to take, you know, the next set, Rivals of Ixalan, to come out and really put the vampires where they need to be, which kind of makes sense. I don't know if they could have easily balanced all four tribes across the board and then not had one just clear standout. You know, obviously dinosaurs and pirates being sort of like the hallmarks of this particular set, which I think is fine for, you know, being the flagship, no pun intended, tribes of the set.
I mean, I had thought merfolk and vampires would need help in the second set, and the merfolk doesn't look like they need much more help from a limited perspective.
No, definitely
they will need more help from a constructed perspective, but yeah. I think vampires needs help on both fronts.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why they chose to do this, where the merfolk and the vampires didn't get quite as much support, is those are both eternal tribes. Like, pirates and dinosaurs, you know, after Ixalan, will probably get very, very, very little, if any, support.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, no matter where we go, we're probably going to see one or two merfolk. No matter where we go, we'll probably see at least one or two vampires. I mean, there's two pretty good vampires from Kaladesh in Yhini and is it Gifted Aetherborn?
Yeah, the two black. Yeah.
Yeah. So with both of those from there, and just, you know, there will likely be a vampires deck at some point, you know, through just enough cumulative support through other sets.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what happened with zombies. Mm-hmm. I mean, Innistrad was a zombie set, and we didn't get a zombie deck until we got Lilith's Mastery and Lord of the Accursed.
Yeah,
exactly.
Most definitely. And of course, you know, only being in two colors really hurts. You know, when you have a tribe that can fit into three colors, that gives you so much more depth and flexibility. I mean, the dinosaur deck, it's three different decks. The Grixis deck, the vampire pirates, it's three different archetypes essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, lots of depth there that they need to explore, I think, more. So what were the standout cards for you? And I'll go to you first, Justin. What was the standout card for you, and what was an utter dud for you?
Card that was an utter dud for me. I tried Navigator's Ruin as an alternate win con if, like, I got stuck in a board stall situation.
What does that card even do?
It,
The mill? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had it as a one of just to see, because I figured there might be situations where, you know, if I go against a vampire deck that's just gaining too much life, or, you know, if some, or if I'm just not putting out enough damage, four cards a turn is actually pretty substantial against a limited deck.
Sure.
But I cut it after the first turn. The card that I was very surprised about, and this would only work in a limited environment, do not play this card in standard. It is trash there. It's Angrath's Marauders. 7 mana, 4/4, doubles all of your damage. Every time I played that card, I won the game that turn.
You should have.
Yeah. It was like, it wasn't next turn, it wasn't, you know, anything like that. But there were so many times where I would play that on turn 7, and then if somehow they did live through that turn, it'd be like, well, Lightning Strike for 6 damage sounds pretty dang good. so, yeah, no, I was pretty happy with it.
Okay, right, I get behind that. What about you, Sean? Anything that really stood out to you in your decks?
So the format actually felt like pretty fairly balanced. The dinosaurs were just really, really strong. I luckily didn't run into a lot of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think the dinosaurs really pushed, but the card that played really well for me was the Prying Blade. It was the one equipment that gave +1/+1 whenever it dealt damage, you got a treasure.
Yeah.
Because I think it's take specific decks, but I was in a pirate deck with a bunch of evasive unblockables and flyers, and mm-hmm. I played two mana, two threes that can only attack if you have an artifact, and he's a pirate, but he can block, so he's a 2 mana, 2/3 that can eat other grizzly bears. And so it'd be turn 1, Cutlass, turn 2, this guy, turn 3, equip, swing, and I still have 2 mana up because I got a treasure because they can never block my 3/3.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that was pretty good. The card that was disappointing, I didn't really have any cards in my deck I hated. I just didn't really have a good way to end games. But a card I think is going to be good in Constructed, but I thought was bad in Limited, was the Thematic Compass, the one that flips into Maze of It.
Yeah.
I had an opponent who built a deck around that. No, he built it wrong. Like, he had too much mana and stuff. And he flooded out, but like it was way too long to flip that thing unless you had other stuff going on.
Because it takes 7, doesn't it?
It takes 7 lands.
Yeah.
And then also I had the I had Vance's Blasting Cannons in my deck.
Nice.
And while that card is really good in Constructed and in limited decks with like Punch, my deck didn't really have Punch. So I was like exiling a land or exiling like a 1/2. Mm-hmm. By the time that card really came into play, like, if the game was going that long and the game wasn't almost over, I was probably dead. So for me, that card wasn't good, but it was because of the deck it was in.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, and I think for me, I've actually got like a 3-way tie almost for the card that surprised me the most. The first one was Direfleet Ravager. I expected that card not to be even remotely playable in Limited. Unlike what happened to us in our first round when our opponent played that, drained us for, I think it was like 16 points of life. We untapped, did some stuff, and, you know, got ready for our next turn. And then they just untapped and played the 4-mana tap all creatures of opponent's controls and just swung and killed us. Like, the game ended on turn six. Like, unheard of in Limited. And just, like, for a card like that to actually be playable just blew me away. And then the two that were actually in my Merfolk deck were Storm Sculptor and Vineshaper Mystic. The Storm Sculptor was what bounces a creature back to your hand. So I would use that to combo a Vineshaper Mystic to put more counters on the Storm Sculptor, which just seemed pretty good. And then unfortunately, the Search for Azkanta was not terribly great in my deck.
No.
Despite coming down on turn 2 and scrying me 3 lands to my graveyard, I was like, sweet! All this value, and I just drew more lands.
Yeah, it's not.
It was a more of I had it and I had to play it kind of thing. But yeah, and then all the dinosaurs are just dumb. Verdant Sun Avatar, dumb. Verdant Sun Avatar, Verdant Sun Avatar, dumb. even the 4-drop 3/4 with reach, dumb. Everything's common.
Yeah, the dinosaurs are really good. Like, they have a lot of low curve. Like, I think the dinosaurs are awesome as cards. Like, even constructed.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how they can keep up with energy, which I'm not sure they can, because I've had a pretty good record so far testing against them. But like, the dinosaur cards, they did a good job. I was afraid when they announced the set, I'm like, we're gonna get a bunch of like 5+ mana dinosaurs, and then a bunch of lower cost cards that are like things that feed dinosaurs. It's like all the cards that typically come with like a dragon set.
Yeah,
like that are like little goblins and stuff that feed the dragons. I was like, we're just gonna get a bunch of like weird little spider monkeys to feed these dinosaurs and stuff. I thought that was gonna be real weird, but they ended up fixing it pretty well.
Yeah.
And the one thing I noticed is, like, so I did have the foil, like a foil of the coat of arms that only pumps one, but you draw a card when you cast a card of that creature type. Mm-hmm. The one thing I did notice is, like, they did a good job restricting our creature types for the most part. And so, like, you have your pirate deck, your vampire deck, your merfolk deck, but inside the dinosaur deck, it's normally two creature types. You have dinosaur and you have human. And your humans are your 2 and 3 drops that enable your dinosaurs, and then you have your extra dinosaurs, which is cool from a flavor perspective because they're like the sun tribe or whatever. So it was impressive.
Yeah, most definitely.
I got to say, there was a dinosaur that I was very impressed with that I wouldn't have been so impressed with it had I realized it existed. I missed it before this pre-release.
So what you're saying is you didn't watch the set review I did, is what you're saying.
Sure I did. I totally did. The charging Monstrosaur, 5 mana, 5/5 trampling hasty guy, he's an uncommon.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I didn't have as much time to go over the set as I usually do. And so when someone, like, tapped 5 mana, I'm like, oh, it's no big deal, you know, like...
I can take care of it on my turn with this sorcery removal.
No.
You just get 5 to the face.
That's Reality Smasher right there, man. Reality Smasher as a dinosaur.
It really is.
Oh, yes. Flavor. Are you ready for flavor? So I played him. I splashed him in my blue-black pirate deck. And I lost one game that I did this because I should have put the spell somewhere else, but it just seemed too sweet. And I won one when I did this. I go turn 7, slam this 5/5 with Trample and Haste. And then I paid 2 mana and gave him +2/+2 in flying with 1 with the wind. And we just went, whoo! I lost one of the games I did that. I won the other game I did it. It was great.
I can honestly say I would have done the same thing probably because a flying dinosaur is the sickest thing ever.
To diversify my power because I was playing against a white deck. To diversify my power and, like, make one of these other pirates, like, a little bit bigger and fly. Because then I just got that pacifism done, and I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
That was dumb. I should have done this.
The gain 2 life pacifism is real rough.
Yeah.
I will say 1 with the wind won me a number of games.
Yeah, 1 with the wind was pretty cool.
Typically not something you say about pump spells like that, but hey, you know, whatever works.
Normally they're really bad. Normally they're too risky because, like, you can't have your opponent have untapped mana. But also instant speed interaction is not phenomenal in the set.
Yeah, all the removal, at least the decent removal that can just kill anything unconditionally, is typically, unless it's Vraska's Contempt, is sorcery speed and cost a million mana. So
it's either sorcery speed or it's bounce spell, so you can still get blown out with blue. But it's because flavor-wise, they didn't want to, like, give all these kids dinosaurs and then your dinosaurs get EOT'd all the time. Like, they wanted you to be all past turn with a dinosaur.
So that's why Vipper Snack isn't in the set. I see. Yep. So, Sean, you kind of alluded to it a minute ago, but talking about, you know, is Dinosaurs going to compete in Standard? We have Standard or Ixalan Standard coming up week 1 in a very, very short 2 days, this Saturday, October 1st, actually? Is that what?
Or if we can postpone to next weekend, that'd be great.
Yeah. So this Saturday, September 30th, actually, is week 1 of Ixalan Standard, and... it's really strange to have a set rotate in the very same day we have a major tournament. And it's like, it's basically asking Magic players to solve new Standard in 7 days. Go.
That's pretty normal for DFW. Like, it hasn't in recent years, but when Daquan, before he went to work for Wizards, was running Game Closet down in Waco, they would hold a TCG 5K every fall rotation, the weekend of the rotation. And it's because it's a new set, it's a fresh set, it's kind of exciting, but really what it is it gets people to spend money in their local stores because they can't pre-order on TCG Player and get their cards because the cards don't ship till Friday.
Yep.
So they would do the event every fall that first weekend, and that way, you know, everybody's scrambling for decks because normally decks have high turnover at that point.
Yep.
This time we might not, but it gets people to go buy singles.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like this set has an unreasonable EV. If you go over to MTG Goldfish, Saffron Olive went through and looked at the EV of the set in general, and it's surprisingly, not to counter your point here, Sean, but it's actually higher than a lot of sets have been in the past couple of months or sets or so. Let me go back and find it really quickly, because this actually surprised me, because without the masterpieces, without anything, you know, like those super chase mythic, you know, bonus cards in there, it actually pushes the rares and mythics higher because the demand increases.
That's been the theory, because less people are buying packs.
Yeah, exactly. And so what we actually have a breakdown of is that boxes of Ixalan are running you roughly, I think it's about $90, and you'll open about $90 out of a box, and it actually puts Ixalan, due to the masterpiece kind of sort of like spread, it's on par and higher than Kaladesh, which was the highest, you know, for this rotation at least. You know, Hour of Devastation being absolutely dreadful, but Ixalan is across the board a pretty expensive set, and so, you know, things like Carnage Tyrant, right? And I think we'll see some fluctuation after
Tyrant,
weekend.
Like Jace, like you're gonna have a lot of card drop because Carnage Tyrant is a good card, but it's like a little bit of a narrow card. Like it's not gonna stay $30. I think there's some other cards that are gonna go up. Like there's a few cards that right now, like you should buy them low because they're gonna go up. But not enough to like weather the storm on that price tag.
I see what you did there.
Every once in a while, I'll give you one.
I'll take it. I will take it. I appreciate it. So, prediction for this weekend then, Sean, what are you predicting to see, you know, at the top tables and in the top eight once it's all said and done at SCG Dallas this weekend?
I mean, there's going to be a lot of cleverness, people trying to be clever, but I feel like the teamer deck is still going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
The debate is a lot of people online are going pro or against Scarab God. I'm still very pro Scarab God in it because it's not hard to do. There's going to be Teamer Energy. Ramnup Red is still looking really good. It just replaced a couple spells with other spells at the same CMC.
Mm-hmm.
That deck's still good. Approach of the Second Suns is actually really good. I think that deck got better. The blue enchantment helps it. If you play Aether Meltdown, it really helps you with your aggro game.
Yeah.
Settle the Wreckage is a real headache. And the problem is, Settle the Wreckage is going to get worse the longer it's in Standard. It's still going to be a good card for a long time. The Mass Path to Exile.
Mm-hmm.
Exiles all attacking creatures. They get a search basic lands for each one gets exiled. But early, it's going to be really good because people aren't going to know how to play against it. Like I was talking to my buddy Dustin Betts about the matchup, and he pointed out that I was playing incorrectly because I was playing my threats combat main phase 2 after I attacked to see if they settled. Mm-hmm. And he says, if I play the main phase 1 and they don't counter it, then that means if I have a big attack on board, then they probably have a settle. If they do counter it, then they don't have a settle. So like it kind of gives you that little bit of information, but like it's going to take a little bit of time to learn how to play around those kinds of cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that deck's going to be really good. I do think there's a really good blue-black tempo pirate deck, whether it's a Favorable Winds or an actual pirate deck. But the problem is there's so many cards that go in that deck, you have to see the metagame before you can really round it out and know what to do.
Yeah, most definitely.
And there's going to be, like, cards and stuff. But I don't really foresee, like, a ramp deck. I don't think Dinosaurs is good enough to overthrow Energy. So it's, like, Energy, Red, Approach, and then there will probably be some kind of tempo deck that pops up. But I just don't know if it'll be week one or not.
Yeah, I know a lot of sites are already posting predictions, and there's some pretty cool lists out there, but there's also just the stock, you know, Mardu vehicles, Approach, like you said, Energy. Oh, nobody's.
And the Esper Gift of the God Pharaoh deck looks really good, too.
Oh, yeah, most of it. Yeah,
splashing back, like Hostage Taker and Freebooter, because those guys are really great to bring back. And then if you're splashing black, now you get to play Scarab God, so, like, you get to do a lot of, like, really cool stuff.
So, what about you, Justin? Are you going to be playing at the SCG Open this weekend?
Unfortunately, I'm not. I just did not have the time or money to get a deck together.
Sure.
Because it's like I've got Mardu vehicles built, but then once I lose Gideon and, you know, Throbbing Inspector, I just don't want to take the time to figure out how do I build cars without all of those cards.
Gideon of the Trials and Toolcraft Exemplar. You're done.
Toolcraft Exemplar is already in the deck.
Just play more of them then. I don't know. Play Dapala. I don't know.
A lot of these decks are just going red-white. You're going to run Aether Geode Miner and
Dapala. Red-white Dwarves? Up your alley there, Justin.
Dapala existed, man.
Dapala's pretty sweet. She's just too expensive
for what the deck was trying to do. She's a 3-drop.
Yeah, and all your creatures were 2-drops except for Gideon.
Okay, that's fair. So, if you were going to play in an event this weekend, what would you be sleeving up to do battle with?
Pirates. I am in love with the Pirates deck. If someone says when they're describing a deck, it's kind of like Delver, I'm just, you know, like, that's the deck I want to play. I love playing tempo because I do like the whole, I like the, you know, tricking and manipulating your opponent aspect of control, but control's just too slow for me. So I really like playing aggro as well. So, you know, a Delver deck that kind of sits in the middle and balances those two things, like, that's just my jam. Unless it says ally on it, then, you know.
I mean, wow. It's kind of surprising we didn't see any pirates on Zendikar, because, I mean, there's water out there. I mean, you would have not
they're
turned
down. They're so busy getting beat the crap out of them.
Sure.
You can't.
But you can't tell me that Justin would not have turned down a human pirate ally.
I would not have turned down a human pirate ally.
That's what I'm talking about here, guys.
Now, for any of our brewers out there, I do have a
sweet
list to
Let's go
at.
To the Elsick corner for a minute.
So, Zach Elsick, he's played a few Pro Tours. He won a Grand Prix with the Lantern Control deck that he made popular. Anytime you see an article that mentions Lantern Control or weird modern decks, you normally see the pros mentioning Zach Elsick by name. He's a really nice guy, knows the rules interactions really well, looks at the format from a really interesting angle. If you're interested in getting a full list from him, at UTD Zach, University of Texas at Dallas, basically, Zach. And it's this deck that's Teemer, but it's not Teemer Energy. He's playing Teemer Spells. It's 100% Spells, and it plays Primal Amulet, which is instants and sorceries. It's a 4-mana artifact. Instants and sorceries cost 1 less to cast. Whenever you cast the instant sorcery spell, you put a charge counter on it. When there are 4 more charge counters, you flip it, and it becomes a land that taps for any color mana. And when that mana is used to cast a spell, you can copy it and choose new targets for the copy. And so you just, like, play Glimmer of Genius and Chart a Course and, like, draw cards. You play Spring to Mind and Gift of Paradise and Attune with Aether to make sure you hit your mana drops. And then you flip this Primal Amulet, and you, like, Torment of Hailfire or Flashback of Ribbons from a Cut to Ribbons and just demolish your opponent by copying it a couple times because the Prime Miami, it's not legendary. And so you just, like,
yeah.
get all this value. And it's just real dumb. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, he said he hasn't gotten really tested much, so I'm interested to see how good the deck is with testing.
Yeah.
But it looks just silly. It just looks silly.
If you're watching on YouTube, I actually got a picture of it. I put it up on the screen, and this 4-color monstrosity just looks... It's a thing of beauty.
Beauty is like an interesting way to go about it. Is pile of cards.
Just call it four color pile.
It looks so fun, man! It looks so cool. Flipping, because the thing that's cool about Primal Amulet is, whenever your spells cost 1 less, it's whenever you cast a spell, it gets a counter, so it doesn't have to resolve. Yep. And the flip side is whenever you use that mana to cast a spell. So if they counter, they only counter one of the two.
Yes.
So it's like an uncounterable duplication. So you get to just kind of go ham because they mm-hmm. can't stop you from copying the spell. They can't stop you from getting these counters on the artifact, and so that makes it really strong. Anytime it says cast, every time a card is like this happens when you cast something, it's real important to pay attention because that means your opponent's ability to interact with you is very narrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if
I'm sure it's gonna have a hard time versus red, but.
Oh,
you survive the red. That's what the Fiery Cannonade is. Fiery Cannonade is 3 mana, deals 2 damage to all non-pirate creatures.
Oh, that's what the okay, yeah, not the 6 damage raider. Okay, yeah, cool. And then you have things.
Oh, yeah, that was a fantastic card in limited as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's got like Gift of Paradise to gain 3 life. He's got Life Goes On in the sideboard to gain 8 life against the burn decks. I mean, it's doable. I think it's really funny how the Chart a Course will literally never actually draw the card without discarding. Because he only has the Scarab God in the sideboard as a creature.
Well, I mean, but it's like a Desperate Ravings that you choose the discard, so that's cool.
Yeah. So like this just has Zach written all over it. I mean, look to see this in your modern tournaments sooner or later. He's gonna do something stupid with this card, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, primarily it's a really strong effect. It's 4 mana, but in standard, like if any of the mid range decks can hold red down a little bit. This is the kind of deck that's going to punish those mid-range decks for doing the format's work. Like, the format wants mid-aggro to be held down, and this is going to be the deck that punishes the deck that succeeds at it. So that's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
if you're interested, go to UTD Zach or any of that. It's great if you want. Yeah. If you want to follow, I don't know how much he'll work with it, but if he's really good at tweeting. Like, he likes to tweet cool card interactions.
Yep.
But he also likes to keep people updated on interesting decks. So it's interesting.
Yeah, he was one of the first people, because everybody, you know, in the control camp was just crying and moaning and bitching about Carnage Tyrant, and Zach just steps up and goes, guys, Vizier of Many Faces, or the Faceless Vizier thing, the Embalm clone from Amonkhet. He's like, guys, it's fine, just use this.
Well, that card's in a lot of sideboards now. I'm running two in my team or sideboard right now.
Yeah, exactly, just because of Carnage Tyrant.
I bring him in for the mirror matches, and I beat a mirror match the other night because my opponent played a Scarab God. I played a Vizier of Many Faces copying a Scarab God. And the cool interaction is you kill my Vizier of Many Faces, and he triggers and comes back to my hand because he was a Scarab God when he died.
Ooh.
So my instep, he comes back. And so he comes back to my hand, and I replay him and copy the Scarab God again, and I have two mana up. And so at my opponent's instep, I Harness Lightning his Scarab God so it doesn't come back till my instep. So when I untap, I get to eat his Scarab God. So now I have this clone Scarab God in play, and his Scarab God's exiled. And we're like, we're getting this. I didn't realize it came back to my hand. I cast it. I was like, hey, that'd be cool if it comes back to my hand, but surely that's not how this works. He shoots the thing, and I go, it does. I get to do it by play one turn earlier than I was planning. It was great.
So there you go. Fun interactions. I'm going to try and get Zach on the show at some point and get his take on this monstrosity and, you know, other things that have to do with Magic. Because he's always tweeting out fun stuff.
Honestly, I think he views the game from such a weird and such a unique angle.
Oh, it's weird.
Outside of the norm angle. That, picking his brain about how he evaluates cards and, does he try to build decks with multiple cards, or is he trying to take this one card and build the deck, and is he trying to attack from an angle? Because he builds some interesting stuff.
Yeah.
My man is still putting up Seance decks and
helping all Seance builds. Lantern Control is his baby. The mono blue artifact deck. I forget what was that deck
blue
was called.
Steel.
Blue Steel, yeah.
Just like in Zoolander, Blue Steel.
No, I don't know that.
It's one of the faces he makes.
I'm sure that's a thing.
Yeah, don't mock Zoolander. I'll fight you.
I'm not mocking. I'm just saying I don't know what that thing is, so I'm choosing to ignore it for the time being.
That's fair.
But I will say, Zach Elsick, I've never had more fun losing to someone than playing against Zach Elsick.
Yeah.
He's such a cool guy, and then he's always, it's always a unique deck. I believe it was Esper Seance at the time. It might have been... Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was... I can't remember the exact color combination, but I think it was Esper Seance. But, Seance and Packrat in the same deck, enough said.
Moving on.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun losing.
He's a cool guy. He's I would recommend following him on Twitter. He's a genuinely... normally higher level players have a certain level of just jerk to him, but he's a very friendly dude, fun to interact with, He's not a pain. He's cool to talk to.
Yeah.
He's a good guy to get feedback from. He's cool. He's in his own world on Magic. I've played his Lantern deck, and I'll look at his deck list that he plays every once in a while and just kind of really look. But he's also one of the big ones who really made Gift to the God Pharaoh deck. He played the blue white deck, and he posted online a lot. Some guy went and won a PTQ with a 73 out of 75 card exact copy of a deck he had posted days before. The guy who won said, no, this is the deck I built. I've worked on this for a while. But, whatever. And Zach was like, oh, well, if he built it, that's really cool. It was almost identical, but that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. I know he's a little bit bummed about that because he was going to take that to the Pro Tour if it didn't break out it did.
Yeah, he was going to take it to the Pro Tour because he doesn't have – DFW doesn't have a contingent of consistent pro players. We don't have people who are regularly getting every Pro Tour. He's probably the most consistent person locally. In the Dallas area that I know of. We have some people in Houston and Austin and stuff. They go pretty often.
Yep.
But he doesn't have a solid playtesting group, which is a shame. I think he's actually started doing some Numot the Mummy writing and stuff too.
Yeah.
Or Numot Gaming writing. So, he's a good dude. He's worth following. Especially if you like interesting concepts.
Yeah. So all around, Zach, good guy, gets the EOT News Flash seal of approval.
Yeah.
As if that was any question. So let's wrap up tonight's show with a I don't know if I could do this a big change or just a logical change that I don't know ever really needed to be emphasized, but for reasons that escape me, and I mean, I'll explain in this little post here, are very, very apparent. So we had a reminder come out. I guess this was on Monday. Monday. Basically, reminding your opponents about optional choices. And I'm going to paraphrase this really quickly here. There's been a lot of question about what we expect players to do when they play a spell or ability, most commonly Path to Exile, but Ghost Court comes up too, and their opponent doesn't do an optional part of the instruction. So Path to Exile, get a basic land in your deck, put it into play, tapped. Ghost Quarter, get a basic land, put it into play, untapped. Since it's optional, that's theoretically to not do something is a legal result, even if they didn't realize that was the option. So, you know, if you've got like a foreign copy of a card or if you have a Texas card, you know, things like Texas Cryptic Commands come to mind, and the communication rules don't require you to actually say, well, hey, because I have done this, you are allowed to do this. There's an incentive for less scrupulous or rather unscrupulous players to not actually bring up that part of the card. So it's like, Justin, I'm going to Path to Exile your guy, but you haven't been playing Modern for long enough to know that it does that. And I just say, hey, it just exiles your guy. You're like, okay, untap, take my turn. Like, haha, gotcha. So in that vein, the revised communication rules are basically we've added, you know, there's text now that says if a spell or ability you play gives an opponent a choice, you must get confirmation from them that they are not doing or doing that optional thing. You still don't have to remind them while they decide if they want to respond, but once it resolves and it comes time in the resolution of the spell to take that action, you can't make any assumption that they're not going to do something just because they didn't say anything. So now it's up to you to ask you. So I'll be like, Justin, I just pathed your guy. Do you want to get a basic land out of your deck?
Why, yes, I do.
Too bad, Shadow of Doubt. Gotcha.
The shorthand, like, to help make sure you know when it happens, Ghost Quarter and Path to Exile are the normal ones. A local judge, Josh McCurley, said if the card is ruled, quote, its controller may, then it falls under this.
Yes.
But if it's worded in a quote of whenever, et, meaning that later on something is happening, those are the triggers.
Yeah.
And so those are, it's up to be remembered. But if the controller may, like, so like instantaneously this is happening, then it's not like a trigger. It's part of the resolution.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and there was, unfortunately, there's people who thought this was not a change for the better. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever played against a textless foil cryptic command. That card has 800 modes on it. And for me to tell you that it does these things, you're not going to believe me. So there's a type of player out there, unfortunately, who truly enjoys what I would consider, and we've kind of coined the term, gotcha magic, where I do a thing to you, and you don't do a thing that you're allowed to do, and then I untap and take my turn, and there's this gotcha moment of like, oh, hey, by the way, you could have done that, and now you're down, you know, a resource of some sort. And that's no good for magic in general. I mean, I would say that you guys pretty much, you know, universally agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. People who think it's a mistrigger, this is not a mistrigger. This is now just part of how the card resolves. There's no actual trigger here. It's just, I'm not sure what the actual terminology is, but it just happens now. You're not missing a trigger or anything like that.
It's the confusion of the usage of the word may.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Because both of them involve a may. If it's a trigger, it's something that's happening at a later point or happening because of something else. Not all of one spell's text, but it's because of another thing happening. Those are the triggers. That's what I just said with what Josh McCurley said, whenever, mm-hmm. or when, or et. Those are the triggers. And that's because it's up to you to remember things that have happened and what's happening moving forward in the game.
Yeah.
But this is when one card has all this information on it and it's supposed to be happening at one point, making sure your opponent understands. You don't have to like lay it out for them, but like you just have to make sure they understand.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really the last part of the, and it's kind of this third camp that we kind of defined here. And that's people that think that their opponent's missing information translates to skill on their part, which is certainly not the case at all. Oh. I mean, you're withholding information, which is effectively cheating in some cases.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's where people think like, oh, I've put so much pressure on my opponent and I've played such a good game of Magic that they made the bad choice and they missed it. Well, but the problem is, did they know that was a choice? And so the argument like other people want to make is like, oh, you can call a judge at any time. You can get translations of foreign cards at any time. But the issue with that is like it's your card. You're casting it. You need to make sure that your opponent is aware of what's happening within the card. Because exactly. they have different rules enforcements for different levels, but they can't have a competitive pro rule book, a beginner's competitive rule book for whenever you're at the PPTQ circuit, a casual F&M rule book. They just have different enforcements for the rules that they have.
Yeah.
And so whatever rule they give the pros, they need to have down here, and they should have different enforcement regulations to it. And so there's so many times at an F&M where you'll see somebody like, and the thing is, it's something that most players do. I very consciously have trained myself not to do this, but they shorthand card text.
Yeah.
And because normally it's not a big deal. They're not a lot. 99% of players who do it aren't doing it to be rude or to cheat, but they'll just play a path to exile. It might be foreign. It might be full art. The player might not know what it is. Who knows? And they'll just say, exile your creature, and they won't say anything else with it.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is, does your card say exile your creature? Period. The end of the text. And the answer is no.
That'd be sweet.
Like, there's more text to your card, right? So like, there's other things on that card. So you're actually not representing the entirety of what the card does. And so I like this rule from that cleanup perspective. Like,
yeah.
The shorthanding what's said on the card, if you notice, whenever somebody shorthands the words on a card, typically the shorthand is the stuff they get said is the stuff that's good for them.
Yeah.
I don't play Path and go, you get a land. Like, I get the other part of it, and I say the other half. I go, exile your creature. I don't play Mana Leak and go, pay 3 mana. I play Mana Leak and say, counter your spell. I'm saying the part that I want to have happen, not the part that you want to have happen. And so that's like some people it's intentional, some people it's just what they do, but it's not good. If you play, there was the debate, like if you play Mana Leak and you say counter your spell, even if you mean it as a question, because they have the option to pay 3, it's really hard unless you're very over the top and you rob Burgundy and say, counter your spell? Like, you have to be real extreme with it. And so, if they don't register as a question, somebody's not familiar with the card, and you say, counter your spell, and the person's like, okay, and they just bend the card, you've hidden information from the card. Like, you haven't made sure that they're aware. It is their job as a player to take that card and read it. But Magic wants the game to be decided by play skill, not... And play skill and variance, unfortunately, is part of it, but not by lack of information. Like, we want the best possible results. It's why we got our Scry Mulligans.
Yeah.
Because they want as much of the games to be decided by actual games of Magic as possible.
Yeah.
And so it's not a bad rule. It's different, and it's going to only impact you a very small percentage of time. For me, it's never gonna impact me unless my opponent's playing the card on me, because I've always said, exile your creature, you can search your land if this resolves.
Yeah,
I'll play Mana Leak. I'll say counter unless you pay 3. Mm-hmm. I've always said the whole card name because I'm very, very paranoid about never getting judges involved in my matches because I don't ever want a game loss because I accidentally say something wrong and my opponent says that I said something wrong and then I get in trouble, or like I want to make sure I'm super clear. Never want to have that problem. And so because I think it would frustrate me from the game perspective because it's a hobby, so I don't want to be getting lectured in my hobby.
Yeah.
So I make sure I'm very clear about what I do.
And I'll say when I shorthand things, like, for example, Mana Leak, I don't go counter your spell. I say leak it. And then, you know, if they know Mana Leak, you know, they're going to be like, okay, yeah, yeah. But if they don't know Mana Leak and I say leak it, they're going to be like, what does that mean? And they'll read the card.
Well, see, that's totally different because you're not shorthanding any of the text. You're just saying the name of the card. So I don't have to – actually, you don't ever have to say a word in the game of Magic. You just have to make sure your opponents know. So you could just set the card down and point them a card. Like, you don't have to explain it.
Yeah.
And then, like, if they don't pay the – if they – like, Mana Leak isn't affected by this rule. Just to be clear, Mana Leak's not affected by this rule. It's just an example that was brought up in a debate. So if I lay down Path, I don't have to say a word. I can just play Path and point to the target. And then whenever they exile their dude, I just have to point to the text paragraph that says the land part, and they can get a judge ruling if they want. I don't have to talk. But the best way to do it is just be clear. If you play Path to Exile, so the way I play my Path to Exiles, exile your creature. If this resolves, you can search over for a basic land and put it into play tapped. After I've said that whole paragraph, when the spell's done, I can just give him and go, all right, no other effects? Then I can move on because I declared this part of it.
Yeah.
And then since I've declared what it does, and now I've asked, like, do you have anything else you're going to do? And if they say no, I continue. I don't have to later on then re-remind them. I have to make sure at some point I've explained to them what the spell does. And mm-hmm. I have to make sure I've given priority and said, are you doing anything else? And if no, I can move forward because I've made sure they knew what the card did. I made sure they had no other actions they were taking before I continue my turn.
Yeah.
If you want to follow it to the rule of the T, technically it's path to exile your creature. When it resolves, go, okay, you also get to search for a land. Do you want to search for a land? No. Okay, continue. So the to the T would be that you're following it at the end. But yeah. All the real rule really wants is don't hide it. Just say what it can do, give your opponent the opportunity to do it, and then continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say that, you know, this affects me in a different kind of way, because like it's mentioned in the article, you know, foreign cards are a playable thing. You know, there was some confusion in a debate that we were all part of, actually, on a Facebook group, on whether or not we should be able to play foreign cards. Yeah. Like, foreign cards are not illegal, people. I mean, my modern decks are a good percentage foreign, you know, different
languages. The biggest problems people run into is they have a foreign card that they get altar-arted.
Yeah,
so we don't have a judge that speaks, like, ancient Greek, and he's like, well, I don't know what Powerpuff Girl this is, so no, we can't play this card, because I don't know what card this is.
Yeah.
And I've also seen play sets of, like, people collected them because they bought them for really cheap. It was like somebody had a play set of, it was like Slaughter Packs, and had it really nicely altered to where you couldn't see the picture, and it was, like, foreign, and it was, like, Liliana the Veil for a picture. And so you're like, is this Liliana the Veil or is this Slaughter Pack? Because I don't know what's happening.
No, my Liliana just costs zero mana. It's that good.
If the card is identifiable, you can play the card.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, I like playing with foreign cards, and I like to be able to... And it kind of, you know, it creates that universal language that Magic, I think, is... mm-hmm. And, you know, like you guys were saying a minute ago, you should not, if you wanted to, you could play a completely silent game of Magic. And I've done that on, that was one occasion. A buddy of mine had an accident and was unable to speak for a couple of weeks, you know, past the accident. And we were in a draft and we played a completely silent game of Magic. And it was the most technically precise game of Magic you will ever see played in your life on a non-pro stage, mind you.
I mean, I would recommend not playing foreigns because... it is just a door, especially for someone who plays slower decks, to get yourself into draw range, because your opponent's can like slow tank over foreign cards, where if it's an English card and you're playing against an English opponent that's speaking fluently in English and you say, here's the card, and they're like not understanding, you just snap call a judge. Like, you know there's no thought processes there, but...
I see what you did there, Sean.
But, yeah, I mean, you're allowed to do... Yeah, you can run foreign cards. You just can't hide information. And like,
yeah.
And the thing is, like, there are people who are saying and making the point, and it's a point that I still believe with. If I make a mistake, if I miss a Path to Exile trigger, like, I want to never miss a mistake again. So in some ways, missing those teaches you not to miss it again. But the problem is we shouldn't be punishing people over not knowing this, you know, 5,000 card game or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Moving forward, and so we don't want gotcha Magic. We don't want bad beats Magic. We don't want, man, my opponent scummed me out of Magic. That's not what we want.
Yeah.
If you feel like that's skill, you're wrong. There is skill to like getting your opponent to misplay and do these different things. Just hiding information is not skill. And if that's what you need to do to win the game, I have an excellent closet full of board games, and you can go play with yourself, you know, at your house. But this is not the game for you. This is not where you need to be.
Yeah, there was the example used in this debate that we were taking part of, the Profane Command Bluff from, I think, like 2008.
Totally different.
Yeah, it's a completely different situation. If you're curious about what that actually consists of, go check it out. And I think there's a video of it. You can find it somewhere. And to me, it's one of the best bluffs ever in anything. You know, sports, war, whatever. Like... It's on par with those guys, so...
I mean, might as well mention it. Like, Patrick Chapin plays Profane Command, where the opponent loses X life, and then up to X black creatures gain Intimidate or Fear, one of those two, until the end of turn, and he has a Chameleon Colossus, which is not black, it's green. So he plays the Profane Command and says, my legal targets gain Fear or Intimidate, whichever one...
The Colossus has protection from black, and Profane Command targets... And his wording is, I give all legal targets fear. And his opponent's fear. Like, well, we're dead.
Yeah. And so the opponent doesn't realize he can block Chameleon Colossus to survive a turn.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, he worded it correctly. Like, it's not a play that I would 100% necessarily make on my own, but it's not a play I would fault anybody for making.
Yeah.
I'm because it's legal. Like he's announcing the card legally. It's up to his opponent to understand the card.
Yeah.
But that if he would have said my creatures get, then he actually broke the rules. Because
yes.
Right, he's misrepresenting what the card's text is. Mm-hmm. That's the same as Path. Exile your creature. I'm not telling you eat a land. I'm misrepresenting what this card's text is.
Yeah.
So it's as players still continue read your opponent's card, call judges when you don't understand, don't trust your opponent. Not that they're up to get you, but the problem is new players are so afraid to call judges because they feel like, because a lot of new players are there for fun and they feel like they're being a bad guy or that they're trying to get somebody and things like that. And so just statistically, new players just don't call judges. Mm-hmm. And so those are the people who get hosed the most. And those are the people who drop out of the tournament. And that's how the game dies. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you want to like a lot of the people who thrive off this, you want to get your top, 132 player. Great. That's awesome. But this is not how you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of the day, don't be a scumbag and tell your opponent what your card does. Yeah. It's that simple. Be a nice person when you're playing Magic, and other people will be nice to you.
It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another week in Magic, ladies and gentlemen. Next week we'll be back. We're going to talk about Ixalan Standard. We're going to see if Team Energy it can be beats, or can Mono Red be beats, or some crazy Dino deck kind of take over the format. Who knows?
Pirates.
Pirates is gonna be real good probably starting week 3.
I
think Pirates, because we will have 2 weeks of decks to plan around, and now we'll know what tempo spells we want. Know if we want to be favorable wins or not.
So if you're in a betting mood, go to Vegas now. I'm sure you can get some action on this weekend's SCG Open in Dallas. You can bet on anything nowadays, so I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some like Magic bookies out there.
Go find somebody in an alley. Like, I want to put $20 on Teamer, and the guy's gonna take your $20. Like, all right, son, we'll never see him again. You can put money on anything; you can't always get it back.
That's a very good point. Very, very good point. So yeah, we'll be back next week, and then whatever else happens next week in Magic, we'll talk about it too. There's no telling. It's a brand new world out there. So really quickly, I know you guys are also on social media. Justin, you are on Twitter at
Justin Faulkner.
Yes, if you want to talk to Justin about Magic, do that. And Sean's over there on Busted Sleeves. I think if you Google Busted Sleeves, you'll find literally everything about Sean.
Hopefully.
Maybe not everything.
I did my first stream in like a month or two last night, and I actually didn't do well, but I had a lot of people, so that was cool.
There you go. Very cool. And you can also find us, of course, EOT Newsflash on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, Gmail, whatever it's going to be. I am going to do some streaming this weekend. I'm going to do a couple drafts for Ixalan, so I'll be sure to post when those goes live as well, so come and hang out with us. Of course, I'll remind you guys one more time, Flipside Gaming, brand new sponsor for us, so go check them out. All of your Magic, Pokemon, everything else under the sun you need. Order it from them. EOT is your promo code for 10% off. Helps them out, helps us out, and we will greatly appreciate it. Since Steven's not here, does anyone want to say it?
Something, something, do it again.
Yeah, that's about right. Well, thanks for watching, guys. We'll see y'all next time.